Good morning. The markets are moving and so are you from the BizNews studios. This is BizNews Daybreak for Monday, the 12th of January, 2026. Back to work for many people. Well, we will keep you entertained and informed on your way in. I'm Alec Hogg, and here's the context you need to win the day. Well, the Rand overnight is firming up again. We're at 16.47 this morning, and that's an improvement to below that barrier of 16.50 that seemed impenetrable for some time, but is now, well and truly broken. Bitcoin, $91,854, up 1.5% over the weekend. And then just to take you back to Friday, the S&P 500 index and the NASDAQ back up about 1 percentage point, both of them. Star performers as far as our portfolio is concerned. ASML has had quite a run. This is the Dutch-based company that makes the machinery that creates silicon chips. And this was up another 7% on Friday. And the stock is now trading at $1,273. Thanks again, David Shapiro. Also on Friday, big move for Uber, which is back to $85. And Teledyne, our defense and technology stock, which was 5% higher as well. I say our because they're in the BizNews portfolios. On the local market on Friday, Purple Group had another good run. It's at R2.40 now. And this is a company that in the past month has gained 15% and 9% in the last week. We Buy Cars has got back some enthusiastic supporters. It came under a bit of pressure recently, and it jumped on Friday to 50, just over 50 Rand a share. That was a gain of 6%. And then as far as the others are concerned, a 5% jump for Hoskin Consolidated Investments. These are big moves in a single day. The big winner, though, of the past week, without question, was Orion Minerals. That was 38% up in the past week. It closed the week at 29 cents. So those are the updates to your portfolio. When we're looking internationally, though, well, more turbulence coming. Investors will be watching closely as news broke yesterday that federal prosecutors have opened a criminal investigation against Fed Chair Jay Powell. Powell remains defiant, insisting he will continue to serve despite the pressure, which comes from the White House.
Federal prosecutors have opened a criminal investigation into Fed Chair Jay Powell. This is over the Fed's renovation of its Washington, D.C. headquarters. Earlier tonight, the New York Times reported a key issue is whether Powell lied to Congress about the scope of the project. Well, the report prompted Powell to issue a video statement. In it, he said the Fed had been served grand jury subpoenas from the DOJ, threatening a criminal indictment related to his June congressional testimony. So Powell confirmed the subpoenas and called them a pretext.
The threat of criminal charges is a consequence of the Federal Reserve setting interest rates based on our best assessment of what will serve the public, rather than following the preferences of the president.
So far, there is no indictment, and Powell pushed back against the administration's threats and ongoing pressure.
Public service sometimes requires standing firm in the face of threats. I will continue to do the job the Senate confirmed me to do, with integrity and a commitment to serving the American people.
That was Fed Chair Jay Powell. Now, a number of senators have responded to this probe, among them Republican Tom Tillis. He came to the Fed's defense. In a statement, Tillis said he would oppose the confirmation of any nominee for the Fed, including the upcoming Fed chair vacancy, until this legal matter is fully resolved. At the same time, Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren said the Senate should not move forward with any Trump nominee for the Fed, including Fed chair. We go to Iran next, where nationwide anti-government protests have intensified, and President Trump has repeatedly threatened to strike at Iran, suggesting America is back in the regime change business. Today, Tehran warned both the U.S. and Israel against any intervention. Speaking to reporters today, Trump said the U.S. is closely monitoring protest in Iran.
We're looking at it very seriously. The military is looking at it. And we're looking at some very strong options.
That is President Trump. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth will travel to Texas tomorrow to visit both SpaceX and Lockheed Martin. The Pentagon says Hegseth is set to deliver remarks to the workforce and leaders at SpaceX alongside CEO Elon Musk. Late last week, the Trump administration met with oil executives to discuss rebuilding Venezuela's oil industry. U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright told CBS Face the Nation, there's a real possibility American businesses will take a financial stake in Venezuela's oil industry.
Today, we are running the sale of their crudes. You know, we have a quarantine around their ability to ship oil outside of Venezuela. All of that goes through American crude marketers, and then that crude goes out into the market. We collect those funds and bring them back to Venezuela to better the lives of Americans and Venezuelans. But in the long run, what will happen with Venezuelan oil resources? Yeah, of course, quite likely you'll see American companies' expanded presence there. You'll see growing production.
U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright speaking on CBS Face the Nation. At the same time today, in a post on Truth Social, President Trump said Cuba will no longer get oil or money from Venezuela. Trump also said he is planning to meet with Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado later in the week.
Farmers are calling it a state-enabled disaster here in South Africa. With foot and mouth disease now spiraling out of control, the private sector is pleading for the right to simply source their own vaccines. We're joined by consultant Emma Nyland, farmer Pete Keane, and veterinarian Andy Lund, who explain why the current government regulations are like denying water to a burning house. It's a fascinating story. More of that on the BizNews briefing, which will be broadcast again. We're back on air on ENCA at 7:30 this evening. The farmers tell us the worst impact on livestock since the Rinderpest in 1897.
Alec, it has been absolutely catastrophic. You can't imagine it until you see it. We've got many of our farmers that have had outbreaks since June of this last year, and hundreds are really battling at the moment. It is flying through the country and the costs are ramping up. Medical costs are going up massively and income's dropping because the milk can halve. It can go down 70% for the month and a whole lot of animals are being culled out the system. On average, we've seen that the cost that we're losing per animal is about 4,000 to 6,000 rand per animal in herd, which is catastrophic. It's something that farmers can't carry. And some of our farmers haven't just been hit once, but they're on the second or third outbreak, Rory.
I'm not a vet. I'm not a scientist. I'm a simple farmer. So all that I want to know is, can I get that vaccine into my car when I need it? Can I walk into anywhere and buy it? As I do with CA and brucellosis, there are two strains of brucellosis, RB51, S19. You can buy them anywhere and you can put it in. It falls under exactly the same act. This is equivalent to a fire in someone's house. If you've got a fire in your house, the vaccine is equivalent to the water in that fire. If you have a fire there, you have to call the government and notify them that you've got a fire. They will then send someone out. If it's not weekend or Christmas, or not on leave, and they haven't been to another fire in the last 7 days because it's contagious, they will then come and have a look maybe 2 or 3 days later and say, well, we'll send some water and we'll find someone to supply the water. About 7 days later, they might come back to you and say, okay, we're sending some water and you'll have to pay for it. That is the analogy that I use to compare it, the way that foot and mouth is administered today, and the reason for the carnage that we're seeing, the economic loss, the psychological issues, and the threat to food security.
That's an udder of a cow with foot and mouth. It looks like someone's taken a blowtorch and burnt the skin off her teeth. So what follows on from that is severe mastitis. And yes, she can recover, but quite often her production has gone to zero. And that's the milk check that the farmer relies on every single month to pay his salaries, to pay his creditors, you know, running a normal business like anyone else. So the economic impact is massive. You're asking Pete about the mortality rates. The mortality rates vary a lot, as Pete says. It's not as much of a death sentence as African horse sickness is in horses, but we are seeing, for example, litters of piglets with 95% mortality rates. Literally, on 10 piglets, 90 are dead. And yet other animals will make an uneventful recovery, lose all the skin on their tongues, their feet. Sometimes the entire hoof wall peels off. If that happens, they're walking on the bones of their legs and they have to be shot. There's no way you can fix that. So the mental impact on a farmer having livestock for welfare reasons on a disease that is actually preventable, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for us as vets because we are completely hand-tied to do anything about it. As Pete and Emma said, it's a state-controlled disease. We do not have access to the vaccine. And we have people coming into our clinic desperate saying, you know, please do something. And we feel absolutely helpless to do much about it at all.
Back to the global story of the moment. This is pretty apt here in South Africa, given that we've just had naval exercises with Iran. In fact, just had. We're busy having them with Iran. The living standards in that country have fallen to historic lows, and frustration with the situation erupted onto the streets. The protests, now in their second week, are the biggest in several years. Our partners at the Financial Times have been giving good coverage to this, and Mark Filippino, host of the FT News Briefing, was joined by the correspondent from Tehran, Najme Bozogmer, to discuss exactly what's going on the streets. It's sobering indeed.
These protests were initially driven by economic hardships that traders have been feeling in Iran's electronics markets, particularly those who have been dealing with mobile phones and computers, whose businesses have been hard hit by the sharp fall in the parity rate of the national currency against the US dollar. The unrest then quickly spread to poorer neighborhoods and in major cities, and then to provincial cities and towns.
Now, you touched a little bit on the economic situation driving these protests. Tell me a little more about how bad it is.
These protests are mainly, as I said, a reaction to the collapse of the riyal, which has lost around 40% of its value over the past 6 months since the June war with Israel. Since then, Iran has been stuck in a state of what many people call no war, no peace. And this situation has fueled economic stagnation and inflation, which is 42%. But food inflation is much worse. It's about 72%. And bread inflation has been 113%. It's massive for poor families. We are talking about people who are basically going hungry.
How has the government reacted to the protests?
Iran's leaders have acknowledged that the economic situation is dire and that people have every right to be angry. So far, no senior official has condemned the protests, but authorities draw a sharp distinction between what they call legitimate economic protests and what they describe as rioting. This includes acts of violence, the use of weapons, or attacks on state buildings, or killings of security forces. Iran's leaders have vowed to show no tolerance for that kind of violence. And domestic media so far say at least 17 people have been killed. Some of them are security forces, but it's very difficult to verify the true scale of the casualties.
Najme, you've covered a lot of Iran's protests over the years. What makes this one different?
What makes these protests different from previous anti-regime protests is the foreign factor and whether President Donald Trump has any intention to intervene directly in Iran's domestic affairs. Previously, Iranian protesters called on U.S. presidents to intervene and come to their help. This time, to everyone's surprise, President Trump suddenly said he was ready to come and rescue Iranian protesters should the Islamic Republic use a heavy-handed crackdown. This obviously has raised eyebrows in Iran. Politicians wonder what that means. But what we know is that the convergence of domestic pressure with heightened foreign tensions makes these protests very different from previous protests.
We close today's Daybreak with an upbeat story for you as you head into the new year. For many people anyway, with school starting soon, this is the time that the hordes return back to the cities and unfortunately get back into the rhythm of life. But why not make it fun? Why not be better informed and make better decisions as a consequence? Well, in this segment, Magnus Haystack describes the extraordinary melt-up market of the past year, a phenomenon he hasn't seen in 3 decades. This clip offers a powerful counter-narrative to the prevailing pessimism, and it highlights the futility of market timing.
Last year, we had a melt-up market like I have not seen in 30 years. It is quite extraordinary what happened last year. Melt-up means that everything made you money. Gold shares up 180%. I mean, we have the SA market up 50%. We have emerging markets up 25%. We have some of our dollar-based funds like Ranmore has given our clients 40% in dollar terms. Orbis, the Alan Gray Global Fund, 38%. Japan has given our clients 44%. South African bonds giving you 24%. It's quite extraordinary how much wealth has been created. And you could only have benefited from that wealth if you had stayed in the market, not listened to all the doom mongers. You remember in April with the Trump tariffs, guys were warning, get out of the market. That American guy who shorted the market, is it Burry? He was saying, get out of the market. There are a lot of guys saying this is a bubble of all bubbles. It just shows you how little we know and how futile forecasting the market is. And yeah, we have a market that the Wall Street record levels, NASDAQ record levels, Japan record levels, and it's just people have been rewarded handsomely by sticking to their strategies. I look, and I've been doing this over the festive period. I've been going through my clients' portfolios, and I WhatsApp them little messages, and I say, hi, Pete, or Johnny, or Dirk, or whatever. You know, you're up 40% this year. I mean, what a life change. It changes people's lives. And you can only get that in a discretionary format and not in a regulated format.
And now you have the edge. For the full interviews and the details behind these stories, head over to biznews.com. And don't forget to catch our BizNews briefing, appointment viewing on ENCA tonight at 7:30. I'm Alec Hogg. Thanks for starting your morning with us. Now go and seize the day.